Today's sponsor is Home Theater Solutions. Absolutely love these guys. HTS is your local technology expert, serving Delaware for 16 years. Home Theater Solutions specializes in TV installations, home automations, Sonos audio systems, security cameras, and Wi-Fi networks. For all of your home and business tech needs, give them a call, 1-800-690-2029, or visit htsav.net. Today's sponsor, W Films. W Films is a full-service video production company located in Lewis, Delaware. Need help getting your message out on social media? How about creating a brand film for your company's website? W Films experts can help you create the perfect video and help you get the social media attention you've been looking for. W Films also specializes in marketing materials for real estate. They can provide cinematic video tour, HDR photography, and a fully immersive 360-degree tour to help your property get sold faster and for more money. To find out more, go to wfilmsmedia.com or call 302-569-0725. 302-569-0725. Everyone has a story. Let us tell yours. All right, welcome back. This is the Rehoboth Social Podcast. My name is Tom Arquino, part of the Social Podcast Network, www.socialpodcastnetwork.com. Local folks doing local podcasts. Check them out. We appreciate it. I appreciate it. They appreciate it. Good morning. Good morning. How are we?
Oh, I'm great. Great to be here on this hot, sunny day.
It is a hot, it's a hot one this morning. Humid and hot. Right back into the summer swing.
Yes.
Do you are you a big fan of summer?
Oh, I love the summer. I love the heat.
You do?
Yes, I love the heat.
Yeah. So. Well, you got if you don't love the heat, it's the wrong place to live, right? Because right, it definitely right. Get a big dose of it. So this morning I got Devin Park joining us. I appreciate it. Thanks for coming in and sitting down for a chat. I met Devin through the YMCA. We have aftercare for our kids through Rehoboth Elementary, and the YMCA have teamed up and provide us a little aftercare, which is a godsend because who works till 3:30, right? Who works till, you know, most of us work until 5, so it's right. It's great to have aftercare and you're just that guy, this the nice guy there. Every day I come in and you're just a great face to see, and you always have your hand out to shake, and maybe a little more now than in the pandemic. Maybe we did more knuckles and elbows, but
well, I got in trouble early in the pandemic because I'm a touchy type guy.
Yeah,
the pandemic just destroyed my character.
You know? Well, I think we're all. Somebody even mentioned that they thought we were going to officially get rid of the handshake.
Yeah,
I thought that was an awful idea.
Yeah,
here, pull that over. Yeah, or pull over or slide over. There you go. Yeah,
that perfect. Better?
That's great.
Okay.
Yeah, I can't imagine. I mean, how many deals, how many, you know, what was this country built? I mean, how many handshakes was this country built on, right? Because that correct. Used to be it. That was like our handshake was our word.
Yes, yeah, sealed the deal.
You know, sealed the deal. Well, so I only know you from the Y. You okay. And your wife come down there and volunteer. I think you're volunteering, right?
Well, I started as a volunteer maybe 3 years ago. I'm a retired principal and also a basketball coach back up in Pennsylvania.
Right.
Currently, I'm a bishop, and I oversee churches all over the world. And so we were hiding out down here during the week, resting out, just getting some rest.
Yep.
Bumped into a guy who knew about me because I was an all-state basketball player here in the state of Delaware. And said, hey, man, I used to watch you play. What are you doing down here? And I told him, oh, man, just me and my wife down here during the week chilling. And he said, hey, man, can you come to the YMCA? To help, you know, volunteer. So I started as a volunteer.
Was it Trey?
No, it was a guy, John Graham.
Okay.
And so I started off as a volunteer, and before you know it, the director wanted to meet with me, said, I heard all about you, and I said, oh, that John been telling you. And so anyway, they asked me to run a leadership program, and I told them I'll do it, but I don't want to get paid. I want to stay as a volunteer. But because it was based on a grant, I had to take a salary. So that's right. How I got paid. So I donate the money now when I get paid to my charities.
Wow. Look at that. So. That's an awesome story. I know that, you know, and I always wonder what it's like, you know, because if you are volunteering, to have the opportunity to do stuff and volunteer, and then when money becomes involved, sometimes it can change it. Like
yes.
It might take, you know, because people don't, I don't think we understand humility and these kind of things that kind of take place with volunteering at an early age. But as we get older, we realize, you know, we have to give back. And whether it's through volunteering, well, it's really through volunteering. I mean, there's not many other ways of giving back unless you're volunteering. So, you know, there's a little magic that happens with that. And sometimes when the money shows back up, it takes that magic out.
Right, right.
So. But you seem to be doing fine. So what all are you involved in? Because I know you're involved with the Y, but when we talked about doing this podcast, you said, yeah, I do a lot of other stuff. So I thought it'd be fun to just kind of learn some of your story.
Yeah. So just touch back on the YMCA. Actually, like I said, I started off as a volunteer. Then I started working with a teen leadership program. We started in about 4 middle schools. Now we branched out to high school. So my wife helps me as well. In addition to that, I'm running the sports programs down at the YMCA, the basketball camps, all the sports camps and the sporting events. But my main focus right now is I do a lot of missionary work. It's funny, we joked about Haiti coming in, but that's a whole other story.
The heat. It's as hot as Haiti.
Yeah, hot as Haiti.
You said, I've been to Haiti, and I go, I was talking referring about to hell.
Well, I haven't been there, and prayfully I'm not headed there because of the work that I'm doing. But my main focus right now, I'm building schools in, like, I don't call them third world countries anymore, but underdeveloped countries. So we got like 11 schools in Africa right now. We built a school in Haiti, been to India. So traveling, and that's what we're doing. But now, because of the pandemic, I'm doing most of my stuff online. Even though the schools are still operating, I can't really travel over there right now. But that's really the bulk of what I'm doing right now. In addition to that, I'm training kids in basketball. A lot of kids can't afford camps and things like that. So I started a basketball academy where I'm now providing it for kids who can't afford it, and I'm teaching them and training them. And, hey, whether they have money or not, hey, I'm just teaching these kids how to play the game.
Is that here in Delaware?
That's mainly up in Pennsylvania, but I'm actually ready to birth and start doing more trainings down here in Delaware as well. Okay. And, you know, but that's really my heart because I was blessed. Speaking of volunteer work, it became instilled in me when I was a kid at the Boys Club back in Wilmington, Delaware, Brown's Boys Club. And I always said, when I make it, I want to give back. And so my wife and I both retired early to take and make the focus of our life now just giving back, seeing how many lives we can bless.
I got my sunglasses on because they're my prescription glasses. But I want to see, Cody's bringing up some stuff. It looks like we got to watch Jake. I don't know why am I hung up on Cody this day, today for some reason. Anyway, Jake is bringing up some cool stuff about the Boys Club, so we got to keep an eye on what he brings up there. But, yeah, that's awesome. You know, it's weird when we talk, and it's funny how you said that, not a third world, right? Because, you know, we compare everything to us, I guess.
Yes.
Like, we're the elite, and we are, right? We have, our life is pretty freaking cushy. But I'm not sure that something gets lost between the second and the third, you know, or what would Haiti be considered, a first world?
Yeah, well,
we're considered a first world,
right?
So Haiti would be more of a third world country.
Yeah, or it could be worse than that after that hurricane hit. And I was fortunate enough; I was actually in Africa when that hurricane hit and destroyed it. And I said to my partner, I was with another bishop in Nigeria, and it was all close to midnight. I said, "Man, we need to go to Haiti and see what we need to do to help fix that and get involved." And as soon as I flew back into the United States, I had a pastor from New York call me and say, "Hey, man, I got a man from Haiti wants to meet you." And that was my ticket into Haiti. And so we've been back and forth to Haiti now because of this bishop.
Well, what I was going to say is that sometimes we compare, like we want everything to be like comparable to what we have here in the United States. And sometimes I'm not sure it's fantastic. Obviously, it looks great, but you know, I think, you know, the struggle doesn't exist as much here. I mean, you know, there's always a little, but, you know, the real struggle. And, you know, so, I mean, we've learned a little bit, especially going through this pandemic, like, you know, I can't wait till we get back to normal. And I think we've learned, I know I've learned, I've recognized that I'm not sure normal was great.
Right.
You know, we may have had been too good.
Right.
And we had some of that taken away. And I think it gave us an opportunity to really take a look at that.
Right.
And be, you know, find some humility and say, okay, maybe we have had it a little too good.
Right.
I don't know.
Well, can I add to that?
Sure, please.
That's why I thank God for allowing me to see the world. But what we call the pandemic abnormal is a lot of people's normal. And that's the point I was trying to make. So here it is. We're believing we're going to be out of this soon. some of them will never get out of it. And, you know, we can use Asia, for example, China and some of the other places. They've been wearing masks forever, you know, so.
Well, it's a lot of people.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, this, you know, it depends. And I'm a little over reflecting back on it and wondering why, you know, having my opinion. I've learned over the last few days that sometimes opinions aren't as important. They were important for a while, but now it's almost like I'm over having an opinion, right?
Right.
And, but I do have friends. You know, I have a friend that live in India, and they are, I don't know what their status is now, but as of like 2 weeks ago, they were locked in their house.
Wow.
You couldn't leave the house.
Well, it's terrible right now. It reminds me how New York started.
Yes.
And I mean, people are just dying daily, like in the streets, just dying. No hospitals or anything. And India is a unique place. I was able to experience the wealth of India when I was over there. I went to like maybe six different countries there, and also the poverty.
Right.
And some of the best hotels and the best restaurants. Then I was in places where when I went to the bathroom, I couldn't find the toilet. And they said, there it is. It was a hole on the ground.
Yeah.
The stuff you see on TV.
Yeah.
And I was there for a week. And it was okay when I had to stand up and use the restroom. But
sure.
Not to be nasty. But
no,
I'm
you.
Grateful for a toilet. So the things we take for granted, just a regular toilet, whether you got a wooden seat, a soft seat, I thank God for a toilet, Tom.
Well, and I put, there was a picture of somebody that had taken two flattened down 2 liter bottles, empty 2 liter soda bottles, flattened down, and then had rope wrapped around them and they were using them as shoes.
Yep.
And my buddy Sarab wrote, in my country, that would be a luxury.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, wow.
Well, that's big in Africa as well.
Right.
We witnessed that firsthand. So that's why we started a food drive in Africa, as well as clothing and things like that, because they actually make shoes out of, you know, the bottles. So the bottles we throw away and recycle, they actually get use out of.
It's weird. You know, one of the big things, obviously, we had the pandemic, but we got rid of the plastic bags.
Yeah.
Remember the first January 1st? And I was like, oh, my God, this is, like, terrible. But right. Now that it's done, I'm almost, like, first of all, I like the paper bags. I think that's been a great addition. But it's like, I couldn't believe that we were using so many plastic bags up until that point. That's crazy.
Well, I'm glad you like the paper bags. I got to now pack smaller things in it because I keep getting halfway to the car. Because I like to pack everything in one or two bags. I'm just that kind of guy. But I'm getting used to it. So.
Yeah. Well, if it's our only problem. So what's the summer like? So because do you get involved with the WISE summer program as well?
Well, normally I don't to a certain extent, but this year because they're so short of staff and they want to expand our leadership program, the director called my wife and I in to say, hey, we want to run a leadership camp. You guys are making such an impact on so many of the kids. So we're going to try something this summer. And I'll tell you, I know it's the Lord who told me to do this because I love chilling at the beach during the summer.
Sure.
But we're going to do a leadership camp every Monday through Thursday from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. every day. So that's the first for us. We usually just meet in the summer 8 hours a week. So now we expand it to like 20 hours a week. So,
wow, that's so. Is that the program there? Is that what they're offering this year? The summer? Is that?
Well, this is a very new program, and here it is. It's free.
Oh.
And it's open to middle school and high school kids. And like I said, our curriculum consists of anything dealing with leadership and, you know, and character development. And then, you know, we also do like some fun things, trips and things like that. But it's an expansion of what we're doing now with our leadership class. We usually just do Tuesday and Thursdays after school, you know, but now we're going to do 4 days a week beginning the end of June.
Man, you got to have a lot of patience with these kids.
Yeah.
I know that my 15-year-old, him and I are really in a rocky spot right now. And, you know, it's all about this. He wanted to go on some with him. He came to me and said him and his friends were going to ride the ferry over. And I was like, oh, I said, that sounds fun. So I thought maybe they were all just going to get on the ferry and ride it over to Cape May and then ride the ferry back. No, they want to spend the day in Cape May. And I'm like, you're 15.
Right.
I mean, I don't know what the law is.
Right.
But I'm like, all I can see is like some stuff going down. And then being like, where are your parents?
Right, right.
And
right.
We're like over here in Delaware. So I had to, at first I had said it was okay. And then I had to kind of backtrack and change my mind. And now he's really upset. And I feel, I'm a little, And now I'm annoyed because he's upset, which is fine, but all that I've done for you, right? You know, right. All that I've done for you, and you can, now you're mad at this.
Wow.
But he's also 15. He's learning. And I always say this is how God allows us to let our kids go and be adults, right? Or we keep them around forever.
Well, I've raised four.
Yeah.
All of them went on to graduate from college. Mm. But I'll never forget. It's funny we talking about this. All, not only all we do for them, but let me tell you, my one daughter, my oldest, 30 years old. Dad, I'm out of town. I need some money. So let me tell you, we never stopped doing for them.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll never forget the day my youngest daughter, the one, she's now a nurse at Georgetown University Hospital. She graduated a year ago. And so anyway, we were sending her off to college, and I jumped up and said, "Hallelujah, we're empty nesters," talking about my wife and I.
Yeah.
Well, that turned into, "You act like you happy I'm leaving." And I said, "Why well, I am. You worked hard to get there.
I've done a lot of work.
It's not like you're going to prison or anything.
Right.
Like you, this is, our job is to let you fly." Now, while I'm celebrating, it's funny, my wife is crying.
Right.
You know, like, hey, but I told her we got to let them fly. You know, they got to go. So we raised them up, let them go. So.
Well, that's the, I mean, it seems like, I don't know, how old are you?
I'll be 58 June 24th.
So I'm 52, so we're roughly around the same age. It just seems like, and it's just the reality of, you know, the natural evolution, I guess, of things. But, you know, how our lives were and how lives are today, it's such a big difference. And people always say, "Oh, I'm so worried about the kids." You know, they were worried about us. Somebody was worried about us. So always somebody worrying about somebody. I think that's our role as we get to be old, as we worry about the future, and the future's fine.
Right.
It may not look like our future or our past, but it is what it is. But it's tough to try and to leave some of that behind, take in how the present is and how life is today, and try to understand that, and then incorporate it into like trying to deal with your kids. Because even the pandemic year, I mean, has changed. I mean, there was times, you know, my son has been at home doing school by himself quite a bit.
Yeah.
You know, and he was 13, or he was 15. He's 15 years old. But he's been on his own.
Wow.
I mean, you know, he handles himself. He takes care of himself. But it's allowed him to feel a little bit more independent than I think I was at 15.
Right,
you know, when I was at 15, I was hanging on to my mom's sleeve still, I felt like. But he is very, you know, he works down at the beach. He rides his bike everywhere. So the thought of allowing him to go to Cape May, I was like, yeah, go for it.
Well, I don't know if this will make you feel better or worse, but when my son graduated from high school, he's never really been away without my wife and I, because we were a family that, you know, did everything together. So he, "Hey, Dad, some of the guys want to go away for a week. No, I'm sorry, 2 weeks, I guess senior week or whatever they called it." And so I told him, "You're not going away for 2 weeks unsupervised."
Right.
I said, and so I let him go for a week. And he was mad at first, and he thanked me afterwards, because that second week, you already know what happened. Them guys got in trouble,
some
started
shenanigans.
Drinking, and all kinds of stuff. And I said, "This is why." And I was actually upset with one of the parents who actually got the house. I said, "Why would you send them down there for 2 weeks unsupervised? Come on."
Right.
Yeah, we love our kids, we trust our kids, but you don't put them in a situation
it's like senior
to fail.
Week.
Yeah, come on. And so, you know, it's always that one or two. And I don't care how great your kids are, how great you raised them. Come on, we all went away to college and did things we know we shouldn't have been doing. You know. So
Jake brought up senior
week. So anyway, we still talk about it. He still thanked me, man. I'm glad, because a couple of them guys got in trouble, got arrested. So
well, and I mean, I said, okay, he's going to go do Firefly for the weekend. It's sort of unsupervised. I mean, I think that they're going to come home at the end of the night. But I trust him to do that.
Right.
I do trust him.
Right.
I'm surprised nobody else's parents were, like, concerned about them going over to Cape May. Maybe it's just...
Well, it's a different day now. But here's the thing. I commend you for good parenting. Like, my kids want to have play dates, spend the night. I want to know the parents. I want to know, you know, the environment, where you stand. And I just didn't let them do everything because everybody else was doing it. And it's our job to protect these kids. That's the reason why I'm still working with kids. I prayed. I said, "Lord, now I'm a bishop. I'm overseeing churches all over the world. I want to work with the youth again." And now look what I'm doing. Because I was blessed to have a mother and father, you know, that was there for me. And most of these kids don't have both parents. And I'm not even talking about whether they live together or separate, just don't have two parents in their lives. And right. so that was one of the ways I want to give back, you know, that I knew what I had. For instance, whenever we had a cookout, my dad would invite the whole block. So now I'm the same way, man. When I back, I still have a house up near Villanova. When I'm back home, a cookout, man, all my former students and kids, they just call, hey, we come on over. So I always have a house full of kids, and I love it because to me it's a blessing. Now that they're older, they still want to hang out with me, but it's what we put into them. So I want to commend you for being the type of parent you are that, hey, you know, I'd rather be overprotective than not protective at all. You know what I mean? And so
yeah, of course. But, you know, and I think it's nice when you have people like you or even Mr. Trey. Trey's the other guy that works down at the Y. You know, because, you know, my kids will come home, they're like, Trey was yelling at us. I'm like, what did he say? He's, I don't know, something like sit down or something. I'm like, yeah, it sounds like, I go, you got to remember, you know, Mr. Trey is dealing with a lot of kids. You know, it's a big responsibility for, and he's not an old guy. Right, he's a young man.
Right.
And, you know, so he's figuring it out. And you may not like it, but that's kind of good because, you know, I always say, are you happy? Yes. I go, well, then I'm probably doing a bad job. You know, are you upset? Son David, that's because I'm doing probably a good job. And
But that's also the balance because let's talk about Trey. I'm kind of his mentor. He actually asked me to mentor him because I've been doing this my whole life. But you got to be tough and tender. And so that's something that he's learning. I like what you said. He's young. But his heart is with them kids. He loves them. It's like his life, you know, even though he's in school right now. Yeah. But he loved them kids, man. Nobody can ever take that. But it's good every once in a while. I'm shocked, though, because I've never seen your kids get in trouble, maybe once, just following, you know. But, hey, but it happens. And at the end of the day, I've forgot all my teachers who just let me do what I wanted to do. But the ones who were tough on me, I'm still in touch with them. Even the guys at the Boys Club who raised me, those guys, man, they were tough on us, man. They made us come in the Boys Club. It was like our after-school program. We would go there from like 4 o'clock to 9 o'clock at night. We would play ball. They taught us how to cook. We had homework hour. So we stayed there every day. So they were like an extension of our homes. Well, like they were parents. And so even to this day, as tough as they were on me, I still thank them. I take them out to dinner, my old coaches and mentors, because they are the ones I remember the most, the ones who did not let me do what I wanted to do.
Do you do any work with our local Boys and Girls Club?
No, it's funny. I tried to work with the one, I guess it's down there in Long Neck, but they didn't really have the facility, and at the time they wasn't taking volunteers. But it is my heart desire to get back involved with the Boys Clubs down here. I'm currently working with the Boys Clubs back in Wilmington. We do a cookout every year to feed the communities and things like that. The same way they gave to us. That was the other thing when we were young. The guys, they fed us every day. You know.
Right.
So we do an outreach every summer where we invite the communities. And so I'm still working with Brown Boys Club back in Wilmington with that. So we do like a community day. We do a lot of stuff to try to get the kids away from the violence. So we'll go into different go into the Boys Club different times to talk to the kids about hanging with the right people. Stan, you know, I don't know if you're paying attention to Wilmington, Delaware, but it's getting terrible up there. They just shot three police
terrible.
The other day. So I'm still active there. I'm active in Philly. I go wherever they call me. I get a lot of calls to come in to try to mentor youth all over, like in Camden, New Jersey. I did things there with the late Darryl Dawkins, who passed away. I would usually hook up with professional athletes and go in and do like free basketball clinics, work with Jeremiah Trotter, former Eagle and Washington Redskin, where I get these guys to come in with me and we do like community giveaways, back to school drives, and things like that. But more importantly, to try to be a voice to these kids to tell them, hey, man, you can make it even where you are. Don't allow where you are to define who you are. So they just need mentors. And so that's kind of where I started a mentoring program called Character Development, which I'm still currently doing. And it's all over. So it's not restricted. It's like volunteer work only. I train other mentors and to help to give back. So,
well, I know, like, and I can use in my life a little bit as an example. I wasn't like a bad kid, but I definitely got involved in alcohol and drugs and, you know, did that for a long time. So when I decided to change my life, a lot of that behavior was a lot of bad habits.
Yeah.
And I remember getting involved in a program and showing up. And I remember just somebody putting their hand, hey, welcome, you know, and shaking my hand. And I was like, and that eye contact, that first eye contact, and just being like, welcome. And then all of a sudden you feel a part of, and you're like, okay, you're not sure. But then you come back the next day, and that hand, welcome. And you're like, yeah. Okay. And they're like, I'm going to go ahead and need you to start helping. And you stand here, and you put your hand out, and you say good afternoon or good evening so that the next person can see another, a different hand. So all of a sudden, and at that point, I was so absent of everything. All right. I did, I was just one bad habit after another. No original thought, not an original idea. Just, and it was always about what I was going to do or right. what I used to do. I couldn't right. tell you about what I was doing because it wasn't anything I was doing.
Right.
And so when I made that change in my life, a big part of that was building that foundation of new habits. And, right. you know, if I wouldn't have had people in my life that were just, and people say, well, I can't contribute. I don't do anything. And I'm like, are you here?
Right.
Because if you're here, you're helping.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, like I said, you change. And now you can go back and help people who are struggling where you struggle. My twin brother and I, we were all
well, it's required for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you didn't know this about me, but I said I would never put a drug or alcohol in my body. Till this day, I still work out every day.
Right.
But my sophomore year of college, man.
You put a drug?
Alcohol. Started with some beer.
Yep.
And then the next thing you know, it was marijuana. And before you know, I tried this and that. And I was raised better than that.
Cannabis.
Man. And, you know, and so.
Did you know marijuana is a made-up word?
No, I didn't.
It's cannabis.
Okay.
Well, it's becoming medical. You know, a lot of people use it for a lot of great things, and the word marijuana means crazy person on drugs.
Well, that's probably what I was, but that's
well, that's right.
That's the part I'm getting to, and then my twin brother as well. And then, like I said, now we both recovered, you know, got ourselves together. Yeah. And so now that's one of the areas I do a lot of my work, helping guys who are struggling with drugs and alcohol, to let them know that you can recover, you can turn your life around, you can get control of your life again.
Well, and sometimes I think, and maybe this may help, helping people, but it's really a disease of self.
Yeah.
Right? We admitted we were powerless over self, that our lives have become unmanageable. So, you know, that would sound like the first step of a program, a 12-step program. We admitted right. we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives right. have become unmanageable. But if you replace that word alcohol with self, because at the point where you come into to that Y in the road, you know, people that struggle do what they want.
Right.
As opposed to doing what they should do. That's the disease. You know, yeah. whether it involves alcohol or drugs, food,
right.
you know, making that big shot. You know, my yeah. son, he loves to catch the football. He's like, can we practice catching one-handed?
Yeah.
You know, it's that glory.
Yeah.
You know, if you'd rather do the glory than the hard work,
right.
you're still in that. It's still an addiction.
Same
right?
thing, yeah.
So understanding that, I think, is key, really, to people finding, hopefully, some peace and some of that stuff. But you know, it's not an alcohol problem. You
right,
know, it's not
right.
a drug problem. It's a me problem.
Right.
And
right.
well, I know when I got sober, I said, well, shoot, I don't drink anymore. I fixed it.
Right.
No, that's when the problems really began.
Yeah.
that's
yeah.
when the insanity.
Right.
Up until then, I was insane to everybody else. At right. that, after that, I was insane just to me.
Right, right. Okay.
but,
good
you know.
Thing, you guys said, you're back where you need to be and,
yeah.
you know, got control of your life. And I think, too, if I'm in a ditch, and I had, let's say, you two there. You read how to get out the ditch, but you were in a ditch. You're more qualified to help me because you actually a product of my environment. And so I always tell people you take your problems, make it your project, and then it becomes your calling, your ministry, or your vocation. You know what I mean? So now you got to go back and help those who are struggling in the areas you've been delivered, the areas you've been healed, the areas you've been made whole. And that's the beauty of how God made us. Nobody on this earth wherever say they lived and died and never made a mistake. And I always tell people, I always talk to my kids, hey, why does God use people who made mistakes? And they start to think, because he'll have no one else to use. Nobody's perfect. So you got to learn from your mistakes, and that's the beauty of it.
Well, and you know, I love the story, you know, the guy in the house with the flood, and the TV is, you know, the news broadcaster's like, you know, we're going to have a flood. Head to higher ground. And the guy's, no, I love the Lord. The Lord loves me, and I know he'll take care of me.
Yeah.
And then so the rain starts pouring, and water starts arising, and the guy pulls up in the boat. He says, hey, old man, come on, get in the boat. It's flooding. You're going to drown.
I'm waiting on the Lord.
He said, the Lord, I love the Lord, and the Lord loves me, and he'll take care of me, and I'm not worried. And gets higher, and he's up on the roof, and the helicopter pulls up. He's like, hey, get in the helicopter. Mm. You're going to drown. He says, nope, I love the Lord, and the Lord loves me, and he'll take care of me. And the man drowned. And he says, I demand a moment with the Lord. And he gets them from the Lord. And he says, why, Lord? I love you. I blessed you. I mean, I praise you. I knew you would take care of me. Why did you let me die? And he goes, well, I sent you a news broadcaster.
Come on.
I sent you a guy in a boat and a helicopter. What are you doing here? Right? And I think, you know, when you're working with people like that, especially young people, you know, the message or sometimes it's hard to get the message, right? And we miss it sometimes. And, you know, I know as a guy growing up as in my youth, you know, I had many opportunities to change my ways. And then I can remember sitting in a jail cell going, how did I get here? What did I? I remember saying to myself, I don't care what happens in my life. It's got to be better than this. I'll never forget that. I, whatever I have going on in my life, I say, I'll never forget looking up at that 14, 15-inch television through a 50-year-old piece of plexiglass in the corner of a jail cell in San Diego going, I don't care what happens in my life, it's going to be better than this.
Right. Well, I'll tell you, it's funny you talk about the prison. That was one of the best parts of my life. I was doing a prison ministry in Delaware County back in Pennsylvania. And I'll never forget, I would go in there on Friday nights. And one night they forgot that I was in there. So I probably been there for 2 hours. Man, 3 hours go by. I just kept talking to the guys. But one of the things I told the guys is I could have been in here also.
Sure.
And in other words, the only difference between you and I didn't get caught.
That's right.
Or I stopped soon enough. And so anyway, the best day of my life was one day I went to this church.
And can I just say something real fast? Because a lot of the reason most people are there, because they got caught.
Oh, that's it.
It's not because they have a problem.
Right.
They got caught at it.
And if everybody who did something got caught, we wouldn't have enough prisons.
That's right.
So, I mean, I'm just being honest. And I think they love my approach because I didn't try to talk over them. But I told them, you still got time to change your life. And so I went to this one church right in West Philly, and they were having a graduation of a Bible school. And one of the guys who I ministered to in the prison, as he was getting his diploma, he looked. I didn't even know he was there. You know, I just was at this church visiting. And as he was grabbing, he said, that's the man. And he pointed, who brought hope to me. And I just broke down. This guy's name was Leonard. And to this day, he started his own business. Because that's what I told him. Some of you guys, you know, you're selling drugs. I said, look, you got the right philosophy, but the wrong. In other words, you got the right idea, but you're using the wrong product. So you got the right philosophy to own your own business, but you have the wrong product. Change your product. And, you know, because you have business sense. And so this guy walked away from the drug game, went to the church, gave his life to the Lord, and now he's running his own business. But it took one person to believe in him. And you already know that sometimes you just need that one other person to get you, not only they believe in you, but to get you to believe in yourself.
Well, and you also got to recognize is that when people are volunteering, and, you know, it sounds like you enjoy it, but the reality is if you're volunteering, it's because it's your penance almost. It's like that's what I got. That's what I get now because this is what I did. You know, even in like a 12-step program, the last step is this. Now have finishing all these steps. Your job now is to be there for the next person.
Right.
Not be there and fix the next person. You're just to be there for the next person. Right. So it's like I'm here. I'd rather not be, but this is what I get because of the choices I've made. And, you know, find people that will say, listen, you're here to fix me. I say, no.
Right.
I'm here to save my own ass. If you can get something from that, but I'm not here to fix you.
Yeah. And one of the things that I noticed, I said, this is good that we're in the prison, but most of them have their major issues once they transition back into the world. Mm. So we started a ministry called Vision of Hope where we would get businessmen, entrepreneurs, you know, professionals who were now tagged with these guys and take them in to help them get jobs because most people wouldn't hire them because of their background. But when we became their mentors or we would represent them, I'm working with a guy now named Paul Bennett with federal courts down in Philly. And he gave up everything. He was into the oil and the petroleum business. But he walked away from that. He's helping now inmates transition to the workplace. And it's just an awesome thing he's doing because, no disrespect, it's still good that we go into prison, but their main issues now when they come out, it's hard for them to find jobs and their families a lot of times gave up on them. So we're really now still pouring into these guys, helping them now transition not only to the world but into the workplace. And so,
well, I used to take meetings into prisons. I used to take meetings into the prison here in Georgetown, and I was early on in my recovery, so I didn't quite get it, and I thought I was there to save everybody, and nobody cared.
Yeah,
you know, it was a big hootenanny, right? A lot of laughing. So I was like, I'm not going in there anymore. And it would be later that I learned that, you know, we're not here to save anybody. We're here to just save ourselves.
Right.
And, but it was a lot of, you had to jump through a lot of hoops trying to get a meeting into that jail. So, and I haven't even, I don't know what it was like now since the pandemic, but I remember when I was, I got sent to jail in San Diego. It was a work camp, really. No, let's not make it more than it was, but it's still, I couldn't leave.
Still away.
Yeah. And these guys used to drive 3 hours every day, probably 3 or 4 nights a week, to bring up a meeting up to that work camp. It was a fire camp. Actually, it was a fire camp in Big Bear Mountain. So they would drive 3 hours to get up there. And I used to think, why?
Wow.
And I remember being in there. I'm like, I am sober. I will never do another drug. I'm good. And yeah. I think, and I got out and I got high that day. I think one of the biggest struggles for people, whether it's, you know, drugs or crime, it's just being honest really about right. to themselves. Like, is this something you really want? Or is this something that you want people to think you want?
Right.
A lot of people want people to think they want it. Like, right. I remember, you know, I want you to think my sober bravado in jail was really just to try to get out sooner. You know, that I had some, you know, I was hoping maybe get early release or something because of this, you know, I want to be sober. And if I say it loud enough, they'll believe it. And it's, you know, it's a lot of BS. So, you know, I think for me, it's about that first being honest with ourselves.
I always tell people, as long as you remain in denial, you'll never be delivered.
That's true.
So,
victims don't get better.
There you go.
Victims don't get better. Yeah. But did you know Matt Haley? Did you ever meet him?
No, I haven't.
He was such a great guy. He, you know, he always said what's it called when they come and do when you get the people that come surprise you and try to send you to rehab? What's that called? Intervention. He said his intervention was a SWAT team in D.C. You would have liked him. He would have liked you. But he, you know, he started the cooking program in the jail. You know, bringing stoves and ovens and, you know, all the material that it takes to teach someone how to be a chef when they, you know, trying to educate people coming out of jail.
Wow.
And he just was that guy.
Wow.
He passed away, I guess, 6 years it's probably been now, but.
So hopefully he poured into someone else who can carry that, because that's what we need more.
Yeah.
That,
no, they still, that program's still going on.
Good.
I see a client of mine still is involved in the program.
Good, good.
Helping prisoners, you know, try to get some skill to when they come out, they can do something other than what they were doing.
I always say there's two kinds of people in the world, those who talk about how bad it is and then those who try to make it better, you know, so.
Yeah, no, I agree. So what's a day like for you in the summer? So you're down here a lot, I guess, now?
Yeah, well, pretty much now, just going to be new. But I still do a lot of stuff online, like my meetings, my counseling. So a day in the summer would be, let's just say once in about 2 weeks, I'll be at the YMCA from like 8 in the morning till 3. And then after that, I usually take time to do my ministries and check on all my different churches all over the world. And I can do that through the internet or on phone, or, you know, through my phone or whatever. But it's going to be different this summertime. But what I plan to do is every day when I leave the Y at 3, go straight to the beach. I'm a beach guy. I love getting in the water. I still will be doing some of my basketball trainings on the weekends back in Pennsylvania because I'm finally starting to get cleared to start my trainings again. I was also doing some basketball work in Florida, but right when the pandemic started, doing some trainings down there. But I'm going to put that on hold for the summer. Focus back on Pennsylvania, so I'll be down here in the Rehoboth area during the week, and then on the weekends I'll be back up in the Villanova area back in Pennsylvania, working with some of my kids back up there.
What's the place, the sports place up here where they do the basketball
camps? Factory.
The Factory. Do you ever go over there?
Yeah, well, actually a guy, his kids come to my camps at these. I'm running basketball clinics right now on Monday nights at the YMCA. And he said, man, I love what you're doing. And so he rented out the place and asked me to train his kids up there at the factory. And they just said, hey, man, the instructions they're getting. I don't know if I told you, but my brother and I are the only two brothers in the history of the state of Delaware to make first team All-State the same year. So actually are going into the Hall of Fame here.
Oh, cool.
Just waiting. I think they said we're going in next year. We've already been nominated and all that. But, yeah, my twin brother, he's – He's doing the same work I'm doing, helping people, giving back. We talk every day. But yeah, so we're excited about that, you know.
Do you think, how would you, if you wanted to try to share the message of just volunteering and the gift that you get from that and how it makes, I would assume, makes your life 10 times better, I would assume, just being able to do that. I mean, if someone was thinking about wanting to volunteer, you know, what would you, how would you say to get started? I mean, how do you even get?
Well, I would tell them, number one, find your passion, right. You know, because there's so many areas you can volunteer, because you don't want to, just like with a job, I always tell people, you don't necessarily pick a job for the money. I don't believe it's going to work out, you know, even though money's a big part, but it has to be something that brings fulfillment. And so you got to know what it is that you want to do, what brings fulfillment to you, because there's so many areas to volunteer. And then make the phone call. It's so easy. People are looking for volunteers. I mean, right now, people are looking for workers. So imagine now you call and say, hey, I want to come volunteer. Man, come on in. And so I've done everything, man, from homeless shelter. Actually, I'm doing homeless shelters now. And I go up to the Capitol Inn in Dover. I went there one day. I was on my way back home to Pennsylvania. My wife loved Chick-fil-A.
Yeah.
And I saw all these kids out there. I'm like, wow, these kids at this hotel. So I went over there, and there was an ice cream truck there. So I told all the kids, come to the ice cream truck. I want to treat you to ice cream. But afterwards, I said, hey, what's going on? Y'all having a camp here or something? They said, no, they live here. These kids are homeless. My heart just dropped. And I mean, it was about 30 kids. And so I told my wife, we got to do something about it. And so once again, here's my heart, my passion. I just called the hotel, said, hey, I'm Bishop Devin Park. I want to come in and feed your hotel, the kids here and the families here every month. I want to do a Thanksgiving dinner here. I want to do a Christmas drive. I want to make sure they all have Christmas. So the last 2 years, we provided Christmas for 50 kids. But once again, that's my desire. That's my heart. That's my passion. So it's really easy. Once you realize what it is you want to do, hey, make the phone call. If they don't know the call, contact me. I'll help you, you know, but it's easy. But the key is, once you commit to it, stay committed to it.
Well, and I think that's the hardest part about volunteering, really, is finding a place to volunteer. And it sounds like you find some great places. So whims if they just want to follow Devin Park and just kind of jump on your back with things that you're getting involved in. I mean, do you have a website? Do you have an Instagram? Do you share this stuff on some sort of
place? Well, if they Google me, they can find me, just Devin Park, and they'll connect to my different websites because I'm actually involved in different areas. Like, for instance, if someone want to help with schools, right. I'm actually a chancellor of 11 universities right now, you know, throughout Africa and places like that. So they can find me. So they, all they got to do is, you know, you can Google anybody now. And then, you know, and I'm easy to get to as well. You know, I have a phone number they can call, 484-238-3878. That's actually my ministry phone number.
Okay, we'll put that in the link.
Yeah, so you put that in the link, they can contact me. And and that's the other thing. Some people don't know how to start, so they connect with, and I'm glad you brought that up. We're doing all kinds of things. We do back to school drives, like giving out school supplies and things like that in different communities. One of the greatest things we did, we went to the biggest project area in Philadelphia called Raymond Rosen Project. 500 families we provided Christmas for them. So I hooked up with a guy who used to play with the Eagles, Jeremiah Trotter. I said, look, man, you don't have to put any money out. Just be a face. Come help us give these toys out. You know, and so a lot of times people go to the professional athletes and all that. And don't get me wrong, that's not bad. But, man, we have to do it. And especially if it's in your own community, get involved. My community back in Ardmore, Pennsylvania, not too far from Villanova, I always say that because people don't know Ardmore, we didn't have Pee Wee football. So I said, they all called me, hey, man, can we start Pee Wee football? Well, I didn't know the cost of it, but I just said yes. Next thing I know, man, to buy uniforms for all them kids and things like that. But because of my connections, I hooked up with a place called Schuylkill Valley Sporting Goods, and they said, look, man, come get all the pads you need, all the uniforms, and whenever the money comes in, Devin, we trust you. And that's how I got started, and so I started Pee Wee football. But once again, that was my passion.
Well, and I think that's where kind of what my about my question was, is that because there's a lot of shady folks, you know, everyone's got some little, you know, gimmick going on, and it's hard to find, you know, the only reason I trust you because I see you every day at the YMCA working with the kids. So I'm like, I don't know what he's up to, but he's putting the time in.
But let me clear that up, too. What we do is we have a newsletter. So especially when you do overseas ministry and sending money overseas, and my financial support is just awesome. I volunteer at the George Community Center back in Wynwood, Pennsylvania. And so notice I'm not Jewish, but I do outreaches there. I do charity work there. But a lot of my supporters come from there, a lot of businessmen.
Yeah.
And we play ball together. And they always say, hey, man, I want to help. Now here's the key. I never went out soliciting money, begging for money. People always just say, hey, man, I love what you're doing. Kind of what you said. I've been watching you. How can I help?
And right.
I'll never forget doctors. The top doctor at CHOP in Philadelphia contacted me. I want to help you. And he said, why don't you ever ask for help? I said, because God told me that I gave you this vision. I'll send the people to you. Don't do what everybody's doing, going out there on the corners, begging for money. For the kind of things we're doing, man, I'm talking about the big bucks, the big donors, they're coming in because they see my integrity, they see my work. My newsletter, though, is something that I started, and I said, I want you guys to see what your money's doing. Well, they all said to me, no, we know what it's doing. We trust you, but no, you don't understand. I want you to see it. So we do a newsletter every 2 months, and they see the testimonies and the thank yous coming from the different nations that they're helping. And I keep them involved. And I also invite them to travel. Yep. Hey, you want to go to India? And so all my supporters have the opportunity to travel. And even when, not only when we're going overseas, but let's say when we go to Dover to feed those guys once a month, they come in. And so, you know, so most of them won't come, but just the invite lets them know.
Well, and I think, you know, and even as your position, you know, the struggle creates a little bit more character, right? You know, if you had everything you needed, I mean, you know, maybe it wouldn't be as great, you know, it's to volunteer and struggle and then to be recognized, to do the work, you know, because there's a journey for you as well, because, you know, don't they see what I'm doing here? Don't they recognize this hard work? How come I'm not getting recognized? It's victim at that too. Yeah, so,
but you don't really want to do this volunteer work for the accolades. You know what I mean?
No, exactly.
You want to do it for your heart. But I'm going to say this, the one thing
I'm saying though is you're building it. You can't have everything thrown at you at once. You grow as a volunteer. You grow as a person that helps volunteer. It's all about growing.
Right.
You know, we don't like to grow around here. People like to just get it and be awesome. And
it's called processing.
That's right. That's what processing builds the character. I said, are we building character or characters? And I prefer character.
But one of the things that also, I'll say this to some people want to volunteer. They're not in position. And that's okay, but you can still start somewhere. Mm-hmm. You may say, well, I don't have much to give. Well, give your time. You know, you may not have the finances, may not have the resources. And one of the things my wife and I did, we decided we're not going to get in debt. We're going to be debt-free. And that's why I was able to retire at age 41. She retired from Allstate, was a manager at Allstate, making good money at 35.
Wow.
But we managed our money well, and now we also said we don't want any mortgages, so we own several properties. And so we said, if we don't have any mortgages, then we could take money every month, pretend we're paying our mortgage, and that's something that we do and help other people with theirs.
Yeah.
And that was really my wife's heart. She said, I want to pay off our houses, and then we can take the money we were paying on our houses to help other people. I was like, well, where you get that from? I didn't hear that at first. And then finally I said, you know what, honey? That's a great idea. So that's one of the things we did. We got out of debt.
I don't think people realize that just putting money towards something else a little bit at a time, you can really do some great things.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, we spend, you know, my wife, unfortunately, we have a mortgage, but we put a few hundred bucks towards, you know, the principal every month. And people don't realize, because if we hadn't, we'd have just wasted it on something stupid.
Right.
And all of a sudden you start
looking at that principal go down, and not only are you knocking the principal, all that interest come off.
Interest is the key to get rid of that interest. And now our mortgage payment went down this year. And she's like, it went down. I go, yeah, because you've been paying on the dang
principal. That's one of the things we do, too. We do financial planning, help people get out of debt, show them how to manage their finances. And we do it for free. People say, we don't charge for it. Here's my pay. When I look at you and you say, man, 5 years ago I was here, but now I have a house. You know, we help people become homeowners, my wife and I. We do all this, and it's part of our charity, because I believe in building the whole person, you know, not just develop them spiritually, but the whole being. So that's one of my keys. I've always been good with money. I'll be honest, a lot of my Jewish friends, I thank them all the time, because They helped me. Right. You know, I said, hey, I don't want your money. Show me how you got this money. And they start telling me, invest your money. One of the best guys I ever had in my life, he's an old guy. He is the craziest man in the world. And he was my first boss when I was he helped me become assistant principal, named Paul Lee. He passed away about 3 years ago. And he said, you make too much money, you know, to be wasting money. And I said, it didn't make sense. He said, listen, I make half the money you make, but I got more. Come to my house. I went to his house. He had a lake. He had all this. I said, man, how you get this? He said, start investing your money. And I was probably like 28, you know, young, but he took me under his wing and said, look, man, crazy every other area of his life. But he said, you have to learn how to make money work for you. And he taught me to save. And he said, nope, but saving's just the beginning. Invest your money. Right. And that's how me and my wife was able to retire. And I thank God for him. So now I want to give back all that
I don't
I
feel like we give investing and saving enough credit. Right, I don't feel like we give it enough glory. It's always like, how much money you got? And I'm like, hey, man, how much money are you saving? Yeah. You know, we don't care about the saving. We only want to know how much is in your pocket. And it's a weird message, but, you know, that's, you know, people get cut. And, you know, we talked about addiction. Money's a big one.
Right.
You know, my oldest boy, he's, you know, he doesn't talk. We don't drink. We've never, my kids have never seen us drink. So, so that's not a thing, but he's a little obsessed with freaking money.
Right.
And he's like, I got 29 and a half hours. And I'm like, don't get so, you know, obsessed with this freaking money, because it's just, it can do just as much damage. In fact, it can do worse, because a lot of the times when you start blowing up your money, there's other people connected to it.
Yeah.
So you're not only hurting yourself, you could be hurting like family members. And it's hard enough without a bad habit.
Yeah,
it's hard enough coming at it just regular.
But then you can start chasing that more than anything else, and then it becomes like your demon.
Absolutely.
That's why the Bible says the love, not money, the love of money is the root of all evil. You know, it becomes, you can be addicted to it and become a workaholic and all kinds of other stuff. And next thing you know, your life is gone. All you ever can say, hey, I worked, you know, and I made money, but you didn't even enjoy life chasing money.
I had this weird connection with things and money that, you know, it's almost like you kind of grow up, and then you kind of, you get a car, right? And all of a sudden, you know, all that makes me the man that I am. It's because now I have a car, and then you get an apartment, and then you get a house. And, you know, I remember getting, you know, a mortgage and a house, and I was so concerned about losing it. Right. Like, if I lose it, then I'm not, you know, a man, or I'm not, you know, I haven't been successful. Like, the struggle, the working through it, managing it is what is more important than the stuff on the, on, you know absolutely. What I'm saying? So it's weird to get caught up in that stuff. And, you know, I hope, you know, I try to tell him, don't get too obsessed.
Right.
But I tell you what, he's got a lot more money at 15 than I did.
Yeah. And it's good too. My son, my kids had a business. They were like 7 years old. They were selling lemonade. And the one day my son told him, give me all the money. I'm the banker. So I shut the business down. But you know, and say, hey, man, you don't control them. You're business partners. But we taught them business. You know, my wife and I always had multiple businesses going on, entrepreneurs. And so, but one of the things, now my son, believe it or not, that's what he's doing now. He went to Westchester University for financial planning. He connected to one of the owners of the 76ers, one of their partners. And this guy took him under his wing because I knew the guy. And he went and helped him after he told him, when you graduate, you have a job. Now he's doing financial planning. Helping people get out of debt, but he's good with money as well. But that started when he was young. We trained our kids and taught them about money. One of the best games out there is Monopoly. Nobody plays that anymore, you know. So little things like that, but we taught our kids while they were young, put money away. They all now not only have savings accounts, they all graduate, but they have investment accounts. Yeah. And so, you know, we need to teach this. And it's part of what we're doing with our youth now. We're training them on money because, you know, when you graduate from college, them credit card people don't care nothing about you.
No.
They pretend they do. Every credit card offer there. And if you don't have money management skills and you don't understand credit, it will destroy you. And so many of them start off with student debt loans, and now they got, you know, this other stuff, and they think credit is the way out. And I always tell people that you just got to be careful, because you don't want to abuse the credit system. Like credit, yeah, you can build credit, but if you allow credit to get you, you're done.
And I think, you know, I always tell my son David, I'm like, you know, give it 24 hours, then consider buying it. You know, take a second, take a breather, you know, because I've bought a lot of junk, you know, just, I got to have it, and bought it. And then I'm like, And then, you know, I was probably okay with not buying it. So, you know, I said, give it 24 hours. And then if you really want this, you know, his latest, he wants to buy a mattress, this purple mattress thing. And I'm like, let's pause that one a second. Let's just wait and see how. Yeah. Well, he was going to buy a new computer, and we paused that one, and he's over the computer now. He doesn't care about the computer now.
You know, it's funny you talk about pause. So when I work with these young kids today, when you say something, they pause, coach. Like some of them call me Bishop, some call me pause. So as you using the word pause, I was just teasing my kids.
Yeah.
Well, they're not kids now, they're grown. One of them called me the other day wanting this, and I said, pause. And they laughed. Dad, where you learn that from? It's the kids. So that's the other reason why I love hanging with the young people.
Yeah.
Man, they keep us, you know, in tune to what's going on, man.
Well, you know? It is funny because I got lectured, you know, this whole, oh, my God, everyone's woke up, right? And so I got, and it was about, unfortunately, it was about the N-word. And you know, because I'm not going to get into it, but I just don't. I wish we would just get rid of that word. You know, I don't understand why we have, you know, and people say, well, you know, it's people of color's word. They get to use it, and that's fine. And I'm like, well, why? I don't know. Why can't, if it's so bad? And he was, you know, you can't use that word. And I said, let me explain something to you. I've been alive 52 years. We've never been able to use that word. That's not new.
Right.
We didn't use it when I was a kid. I mean, it's been a bad word for a long time. It was worse then.
But why didn't you? You were taught. You know, you didn't.
Damn right I was taught.
Yeah, you were taught. And that's the issue now. And it's funny we talking about that. That's one of my challenges now. And I'm now been asked to go into some of the white churches to help with this racism stuff. And I welcome that because, like I said, it's a learned behavior. One of the best things that happened to me was when I was a freshman in high school, Joe Biden and all them guys decided to take all the inner city kids and ship them out to the, you know, the suburban schools. I was upset with that at first because I'm saying, why we got to leave? But it actually ended up helping me to see because now I'm understanding other people. And you know, it was a big roar back then. That was back in the 70s. I don't know if you remember that when they took the schools. And so a lot of them schools still don't exist.
I was born in 68.
Yeah. So anyway, it really, at first, like I said, I was mad. And now, but I'm glad it happened. But I want to come to something not too long ago. I was working at the school called St. Gabriel's Hall. That's when I was the vice principal. And a lady came in, one of my teachers, and she said, I need you to talk to my fiance. I said, well, what's wrong? Our school consists of all kinds of kids, but it probably was 40% African-American. And so he doesn't want to be working here with all these black kids. So I said, well, tell him I want to meet with him, but don't tell him what I want to talk to him about. So the guy comes in. Hey, man, how you doing? I'm saying this. Hey,
was
man.
He an African-American?
No, he was a white guy.
White guy.
And most of my students was black. So my teacher was white. But she said, man, you have a great way of helping people with everything. Can you help my fiance understand or help him get delivered from racism?
Sure.
So anyway, he comes in we're talking. I said, hey, man, I just want you to know I love you. And he looked. I said, yeah, I love you, man. I love everybody. And I said, now I'm going to be straight with you. This is why you're here. I told her don't tell you because you wouldn't have came in. But I hear you have a problem with your fiance working here. She's making a great impact with these kids. Why would you want to destroy that? What do you have against me? He said, nothing. I said, well, why you don't want her here working with black kids? I said, where did that come from? Did you learn that at home? And he put his head down. I said, no, we can talk, man. This is safe. My office is closed. He said, well, the truth, I don't have a problem with you. But when I was a young kid, four black guys beat me up. I said, what? Let me tell you, I wouldn't like them guys either. If they beat me up.
Right.
But what did I do to you? What did these kids do to you?
Right.
Man, he broke down. He said nothing. He said, but that's where it came from. It started with that. And next thing you know, he hugged me. And he let her continue to work there. And then she told me things were so much better. You know what I mean? And so we stayed in touch. And I just believe, you know, in another instance, I know this is being broadcast, but I had a guy who moved in our development. I'm not going to name my development. Put up a Confederate flag. And I said, we don't have that in this neighborhood. So my wife said, where you going? So I'm going to talk to him. And I just believe, you know, and I went and told him. I said, hey, man, this is a great community. I can't tell you what to do and all that, but, man, that flag does not represent this community. We all get along in here. Don't care what color you are, white, black, Puerto Rican, we just get along. And I'm just one of them people, I'm God-fearing and, you know, kind of like you. I tell people there's a difference between a person who's not a racist and an anti-racist person. You cannot be a racist and just believe that all people are created equal. But when you're anti, you'll speak out and speak up. And so anyway, 2 days later, that flag came down. you know, nice. And I even helped his wife get a job. But I just believe people like you and I who weren't taught that, it's a learned behavior. Nobody's born, you can't convince me, born out of your mama's womb and racist. It's what you're taught in your home.
That's right.
And that's why I said I thank God for that experience when they shipped us out to them schools, you know.
Well, we started a new podcast called Are You Spirited? And it's because I'm tired of it. I'm kind of over it. I mean, I'm tired of race. I'm tired because, you know, as people talk about, you know, black people, that means that we're white people, right? And right. white people are bad, right? It's this, and I get a right. little. I don't even like. I don't want to be. Listen, you got a great tan. I mean, I'm not a white person, but now when I'm called that, it means that I'm the opposite of against of what, and I can't stand it. Right. So spirited, it's like I love people that it's not about what I can't do. You know, don't give me a list of things I can't do. Tell me what you can do, and don't tell me reasons why. Tell me the reasons why you can, and that's what I like. And you know, like we do a podcast, a music podcast. I told the guys, guys and girls, I said, I don't want to put music out that has the N-word in it.
Right.
Now, it happens. We do it. It's sometimes, you know, because we're viewing all the spot or the Firefly. But I mean, it's like, it's weird. It's like having cancer and then going to see the cancer doctor and having a cigarette on the way.
Right.
It's defeating the purpose. But listen, it's not mine, and I get it. So I'm tired of the argument. But I just like spirited people, and to me, you are a spirited person.
Well, I believe there's only two kinds of people on this earth: either you're good or you're bad, either you're a difference maker or you're not, either you're a complainer or you're not. My wife describes me this way: I'm a problem solver. I really believe that's what God calls us. And you might say, "Well, it's not my job." Well, it is our job. I always ask people, "What is true success to you?" And my definition of true success is not what I do for myself, what I do for others. And I always ask all my leaders, I have spiritual leaders all over the world, whose life is better because you're in it? Whose life has you impacted? Who have you made change? Who did you help change to make their life better? And if we can't say anyone, then to me, you're not successful. I don't care how much money you have in the bank, how many cars you have, how many houses you have. If you're going to be successful, then you need to impact the lives of other people. And that means you got to step out. When I look at people, Tom, and my wife will tell you, I don't care if you're white, black, Puerto Rican, I'm a people's person. I start conversations with everybody, you know, when I'm out. But it's the way I was brought up. And now it's even more so as I'm learning the Bible, you know, I don't just go to church. The Bible lives in me. Because really, if you truly got a relationship with the Lord, you're not a racist. You don't see color. We all brothers and sisters. So when I go to places where they don't even speak my language, man, the love that we get, we don't even speak the same language. I got interpreters, but the hospitality, the love, just you're my brother. And that's the way God intended it. I should be able to walk in any Sunday to any church I want to in the world and not be looking funny. Why are you here? You know, and it should be the same, you know.
Well, you know, and I don't experience race. I don't experience any hate. In my day, you know, I'm like you. I love people every color.
Yeah.
And if I walk to Wawa and a guy of color is walking up, I make sure I get that door open because I want him to know that I love everybody.
Yeah. Yeah.
And only place I ever find this racism is as the newsism.
Yeah.
The newsism seems to like to create the racism. But in my world, and my buddy Kifa, who does a podcast for me, he shared a story which opened my eyes. Because I was a little bit blind. And I was sitting here. And I'll tell the story, and then we got to kind of wrap it up. But I was sitting here. We were going to do a podcast. We had podcast in this other space down the street a bit. So he had pulled up there. He'd gotten here early, pulled up, walked up to the old podfay, we called it, pulled on the door. It was locked. He went back to his car, and he decided he'd wait for me. I'm over here in this spot. In the meantime, somebody has hit a car in the parking lot and called the police. So now a state cop pulls up, parks his car along the sidewalk in front of my hair salon. So I'm here, state cop's there, and Kifa's over there. Kifa's a guy of color, Kifa Sunborn. He's this freaking great guy, man. And I go out, and I'm like, Kifa, over here. He's like, mm-mm. Because in my world, I'm none of this. Car wrecks, doesn't matter to me, right? I pull the handle, doesn't matter to me because I'm white, right? I'm privileged. Kifa's like, I pull the handle, I get my car, the state police pull up. Somebody's clearly called the police on me for pulling the handle of a building. This is what's going through his head. And I'm like, Kifa, come on over. He's like, I'm staying right here.
And I won't get in trouble.
I don't want to get in trouble.
Yeah, hey,
and,
I understand.
And we would get, he would come over here and explain that to me, and I was like, unfortunately, there isn't anything I can do to fix that.
Right, right.
I can't fix that. I can open so many doors and I can hug so many people, but I can't fix that natural fear that's already been kind of placed there because of the past and whatever right. happened. So I get it. But I know that we can celebrate us as humans,
yep.
which I love. And I don't look at color. I could care less. I love people. And Kifa is funny because I was at Panera and him and his son, who goes to Sussex Academy. This was a year and a half ago. But they were sitting at a table with laptops, and I walked up. I'm like, what you guys up to?
Yeah.
And they're like, what do you want? And I'm like, I'm wondering if you're working on music. And they go, we are. And I go, I do a podcast. I'd love to have you guys on.
Right.
And that would start a friendship.
Right.
That will never end, right?
Right.
And I those guys came on the podcast, and we just have, and now Sunborn does a podcast for us, and it's just, it's unfortunate for people that don't, that want to use color and eliminate relationships because
right.
of it. Because
right.
I can tell you, my world is, and my life is so much fuller because I get to have those relationships.
And that's why God made us all, that we need each other. My dad worked for DuPont, that big
right.
company. So every year we went to summer cookouts, the DuPonts, very wealthy family. None of them was dark like me, but they welcomed us. And when my dad passed away, they still embraced, took care of my mother, made sure she was set, you know. But it was, once again, the way we were raised. And I just believe we just can be an example. The way we can help is just continue to be an example. When I saw you on the boardwalk the other day, hey, man, it was like, hey, what's, you know what I mean?
Right.
Hey, Teresa, you know. And so that's just who we are, you know. And so I just thank God for you and our connection. I like what you're
Absolutely.
Doing. Keep doing what you're doing. And
thank you, buddy.
I don't care how busy I am. I said I'm going to carve time out, you know.
Well, and let us be a voice. If we need to, if you got something going on, you want to promote something, if you got something on Instagram, you want to send it to us, we'll repost
yeah.
it. We got quite a few Instagrams. We can definitely be a platform for any of these things that you got going on. And whatever we can do, don't bother. Always ask. Because
okay.
we love it. That's
yeah, no
why
problem.
We're here.
Yeah, no problem.
All right, Devin Park.
All right, thank
good
you.
Guy. You're a good guy, Devin.
Trying to be.
I appreciate you coming on. Thank you so much, and we'll catch you next time.
Okay,
all right,
thank
bye.
You so much.
All
God
right.
bless y'all.
God bless you. Bye.
I'm good now.